everybody, this is Andy Marquette, and I am joined by my colleague Lise McTagg, and we are Let's Geek Out. Hey Lise, how are you? It's been a minute.
It really has been, hasn't it? I mean, I was thinking, God, it's been so long since we recorded, but then I remembered we did two at Klexicon, so...
That was awesome, by the way, seeing you at Klexicon.
That was really great. It was really fun to see a bunch of people who I'd only ever like talked to online or over Skype or what have you.
I know, right? It just, oh my God, it was a lot of fun. Kudos to you for grabbing those two people to interview. That was a hella good time.
It was.
Even with the background sound effects.
Of the dude with the drink cart.
Dude with the drink cart was the best. That was the best. I was like, oh Jesus God. And then there was like a couple of people that walked by screaming something. Hey, it was Klexicon. What are you going to do, right?
Yep.
All right, people. So here we are. We're back. We missed you. I know you don't think so, but we did. And today, because Lise and I are huge freaking space opera fans, we are talking about the series Killjoys, which airs on the Sci-Fi Channel. And right now it's between season 3 and 4. They started production on season 4. In February, which means season 4 will probably launch sometime this fall. But in the meantime, we're going to tell you what it is. I've watched all 3 seasons. Lise is like somewhere in the middle of season 2. That's cool. Whatever. You don't need to know all the details. We're just going to tell you why the hell you need to watch this awesome show. Okay, so let me give you some background, and then I'm going to turn it over to Lise, and she's going to drive. Everybody grab your beer, whatever. Killjoys, you guys, are galactic bounty hunters, and they operate in a 4-planet system called the Quad. And this Quad, all the worlds in there are beholden to something called the Company, which in turn is tied to a group of families called the Nine. So you've got the corporate hierarchy here and the class hierarchy here, the Nine. These two have worked hand in glove to leverage political and cultural influence. So you've got your hierarchical society based on class, but also blood and political ties. The Company has, of course, extended its greedy and corrupt power grabs all over the Quad, stripping areas of their resources and leaving god-awful pollution and crap in its wake. Killjoys, on the other hand, operate through their organization, the RAC, Reclamation Apprehension Coalition. I so want to be part of the RAC. And they're supposed to be impartial, so they're basically allowed to operate anywhere in the Quad as long as they have proof that they're pursuing a warrant or bringing one in. So our focus here in this milieu is a particular team of Killjoys, including Dutch, played by Hannah John Kamen, who's an awesome female ship captain, and Johnny. Some of you may recognize him. He's from Warehouse 13. He played Steve.
And he was on Lost Girl.
Yes, he was on Lost Girl. These two are like your primaries. And then we have Johnny's brother, Davin, join in later on. And so the three of them are basically involved in intergalactic conspiracy shit. Is that about it? Did I sum that shit up?
Yeah, that sounds pretty much like you just hit the nail on the head. Intergalactic conspiracy shit.
Or... like, you know, you've got like the Quad, you've got like the Company being douchebags, you've got the Nine, this like hoity-toity hierarchical family, and you've got rumors of revolution against the Company and the Nine. So all of this is like this giant space opera stew, and in this is the Killjoys operating, but also each of these characters who are bounty hunters in our Killjoy team have their own interpersonal battles that they're waging. So, Lise, take it from here. Tell us, like, some of the other salient points.
One of the things I really like, and, I mean, I know you're a fan of this, it's the political intrigue.
Oh, I love it.
Because you hit, like, the high points, but there are so many factions. Like, the Nine are these Nine families who occupy the top of sort of the class power structure, but they're maneuvering against each other constantly. There are sort of religious factions. There's the Scarbacks. They exist for, you know, their own purposes. You have unions on some worlds, and, you know, workers groups, that sort of thing. And I mean, that's one thing that show does so well, is that there are so many groups and there are so many plots and subplots that are going on at all time, and you really get that feeling as you're watching it that this is a complicated society that's been built out here on these 4 planets, and we see it through the eyes of Dutch, Davin, and Johnny, who are ostensibly neutral, but they keep getting pulled into, like, one group's agenda or another's, and they have to figure that out while, like you said, also figuring out their own interpersonal bullshit.
And there's
and
a
there
lot.
There is a lot of it. Yes.
Oh, you know, I forgot to mention one of the other characters who I really love is Lucy, the ship.
Oh, the ship.
The ship.
Yes.
It's an AI ship. And so if those of you who watch Legends of Tomorrow are clearly going to know what that's about. And Lucy and Johnny have a particularly fun relationship because he's the geekoid. And the way that Dutch and Johnny met, Johnny was trying to steal the ship. So they form this relationship out of that, and they become kind of like, it's a really tight comrade sibling-ish kind of bond between them. And Johnny, meanwhile, forges this relationship with Lucy because he's an engineer and he's very, very good at fixing things. And so he and Lucy have like this kind of flirtatious, cute thing going on, but it's just, it's fun to watch. And I wanted to touch on the relationships between the characters. I love it when there's a relationship between a guy and a woman, cishet, heterosexual, that does not go all sexy times. And Johnny and Dutch have that kind of relationship. They've got each other's backs. They're like siblings and war veterans. And I love watching these two interact. And they fight, they have falling outs, and they forgive each other, and they call each other out. And it's just such a real feeling to me watching these two on screen. I'm going to turn it back to you because you had some thoughts about the setting.
Oh, the setting is fantastic. So each world has a completely different feeling, and we spend most of our time on Westerly, which is probably the most sort of depressed economically of all the worlds. That's the world that pretty much everyone is trying to get off of. It's called Westerly, probably not by accident, because it does have a very sort of wild, wild west feeling to it. It's, well, wild, wild west / industrial chic.
It's got the ethos of the wild west, but it looks like you're saying, industrial section, bad,
yeah.
Industrial section of town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because everything's, you know, concrete and metal, and it just, you look at it and you can just almost sort of feel the grunge of the place seeping into your own pores. It's very atmospheric with fog clouds and trash in the streets and people kind of just trudging through. And the extras do a great job. I mean, they look
right
downtrodden. Oh my God. And so we spend a lot of our time there when we're not on the ship with the characters. And we get to meet some of the people who live on this planet, like Pree, who's one of my favorites.
Yay, Pree!
Yes, the bartender at the Royale, who is like gender fluid as the day is long. You never know what he's going to be wearing, but it's going to be eye-catching, and it's going to be memorable and fabulous. And he's not going to give two fucks wearing it. But, you know, you also know he's into some very shady shit. But at the same time, he's made this bar into sort of, you know, the heart and soul of the city.
It's like a community center in a way. It's like Killjoys go, Down and Out go, like bad shit can go on. But in Pree's space, and he's like the leader of it, he's like, no, when you're in here, it's neutral space. Basically, you know, you're here to enjoy yourselves and have a drink and listen to the music and do whatever. And so a lot of business deals and other kinds of shady deals are made, but as long as it's not disrupting the bar, Pree's fine with it. And we find out a bit about his backstory as to why he might be fine with it. But I'm not going to say that here.
Yeah. And, you know, the bar also serves as a place where we meet one of the other side characters, Dr. Potter, mm-hmm. who is, as it turns out, a member of one of, you know, this super high social strata.
The nine.
And is on this planet for her own reasons. But, you know, you get the idea that she's incredibly intelligent. I mean, she's a doctor, a medical doctor. And morally ambiguous because she lives
that.
On Westerly and has to be. And, yeah, she's really cool. And I've been really enjoying some of what she's been up to in season two.
She's like, I love the fact that she has this background as part of one of the most powerful groups of the Quad, the Nine. But she would never know it because it's not something she makes obvious. And this is what is so cool about this show, is that each character has like this backstory and they're battling the demons of their backstories. Dutch, who is another one of my favorite characters as the captain of the ship, you know, Lucy is the AI. She has a really fucked up backstory. And you'll see more of that in season three. You'll see that basically unravel. But she deals with it in seasons one and two, and it's going to play a larger role in the Quad crazy that's coming down the pike. And Johnny also has his own fucked up backstory, and his brother Davin has his own fucked up backstory. He was a soldier and now has some kind of weird ass PTSD going on. And there's like some weird thing going on with some kind of substance that is being used with weird experiments. And you'll find out more about that through season two and three. So there's, again, who's behind that? We don't know for sure. So what's brilliant about the show is it leads you down one path. Like, oh, okay, I figured it out. That's who's behind it. And then boom, twist. Oh my God, no, it's not that person. So it's like, it's brilliant in the way that it sets up, as you were saying, an entirely morally ambiguous universe.
Yeah, I mean, there is no black and white here. It is shades of gray all the way down. Some of them may be darker than others, but it's really hard to point. I mean, the longer you spend in watching the show, the harder it is to point at someone and say, that's the bad guy. Because every time you scratch the surface of the one bad guy, there's another bad guy.
Right? And then you end up thinking, okay, so who, because everybody has their flaws, right? I mean, everybody has a flaw, even the ones, I'm Team Killjoy all the way. But then when you meet some of the characters who are like Potter, for example, who is part of the Nine, and the Nine are a bunch of like, you know, stuck up assholes in league with the company. But there are individuals within the Nine who are sort of embedded in a place where they're trying to do the right thing, like behind the scenes, but yet, you know, they can't quite do it as openly as they would like, because otherwise, you know, they'll get drummed out. And maybe that's what happened to Potter. We don't know. I'm going to leave that for folks to find out. I love that ambiguity. It's messy and it's real. It feels real to me.
Yeah, it's, you know, people who are trying to do good and right, but whose hands are tied by circumstance.
Right, exactly. And Dutch, I think, is a really good example of that. I think ultimately she is trying to do her job as a Killjoy. She's a level 5, which puts her at the highest level of Killjoy, folks. And that means that she has dispensation to kill if necessary when she's bringing in bounties. Johnny's at a level 3, and it's kind of a funny comic, like, point of contention between them, because when Davin's brought on as a Killjoy, he immediately gets level 5 because he was like a soldier and was involved in that. And Johnny's like, what the hell? How come you guys are level 5 and I'm not? So it's kind of this funny, like, alpha male kind of standoff between the bros in space. But I love that Dutch is dealing with this, like, she's got this background that is really shady and murky, and that's going to play a role later on. But I love that that's part of what's driving her. And it also is like really stressful for her. And there's a lot of real fear that you can see in her. And this is a badass character. Dutch is a fucking badass. But I love that they make her vulnerable enough that you root for her and you worry about her. I love that.
Yeah. One of the things I really like about going back to the interpersonal relationships and how they're all basically messed up in their own special ways. But at the same time, they're all very confident, not only in themselves and their own abilities. They may sometimes question, you know, like their motivations and is my background really the background I think it is. But they never question their abilities and they never question their ties with each other.
I love that. You know? Yeah.
As a plot point, yes, but when it comes down to it, I mean, these three are a family unit. never mind that, you know, two of them are actual brothers, but between them and Dutch, they're a little family and they lean on each other and they can't really survive without each other. And given that they are living in such a sort of complex social environment, I mean, I think that's really what gives them a leg up over other characters in the series who only have themselves and maybe their own faction to lean on, but a lot of times not even completely that.
Those are really interesting points. I want to talk about a couple of other characters. Let's talk about Alvis. You had referenced the Scarbacks. Alvis plays, and the Scarbacks, friends, are kind of a religious, I don't want to say cult. Lise, how would you describe Alvis?
I mean, if you want to go with the U.S. government's description of what cult versus religion, they probably would be a cult. If we want to get technical. But, I mean, basically, the Scarbacks are a religion that grew up in sort of the oppressed peoples who worked in the mines.
Which seems legit, because, you know, a lot of belief systems do spring out of social revolution, if you think about it.
And they're called Scarbacks for a couple of reasons. For one thing, you know, they take on the sins of others through their own pain, which I think is a really interesting idea. You know, being raised Catholic and all that, it's certainly not a new idea. But the way it's treated here, it's very literal. I mean, someone's sins are relieved by like the actual cutting or mortification of the Scarback's flesh. And then also on their backs, they have sort of scarred the texts of their, you know, texts from their sacred texts. Hold on a second. My cat wants in. I'll be right back.
Yeah, keep recording that because I love having like little interludes. You guys, Lisa's cat wants in and it's banging on the door. It's really hilarious.
Yeah, he's going to keep at it until I let him in. Hold on one moment.
She'll be right back. So, you know, I'm going to riff off a little bit while we're waiting for Lise to get the kitty. Oh my God, that's hilarious. So, the Scarbacks are, they're embedded, they're ingrained in sort of this revolutionary spirit that's been percolating among, you know, the downtrodden, as you would, the term you use, Lise. So the Scarbacks are kind of like a glue sort of for the revolutionary spirit that's developing among the downtrodden in Westerly. They are part of this revolution, and Alvis is in fact deeply embedded in this revolutionary movement. So there's this interesting play here between revolution against the company and the Nine, and how like a spiritual belief system plays into driving some of that revolution. I really liked that touch, actually.
Yeah, me too. I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, people need something to believe in.
Right.
I think that's a premise in this show and not just a reality. And they do that through the Scarbacks, which I love because it would have been so easy to just kind of gloss over that part of things.
Absolutely.
You know, you have the company and the Nine and all of these people are in such dire straits. And what do we do? Well, you give them some hope.
Right.
Which, you know, not only makes it for a more rounded society, but then also allows the writers to take that hope away.
Exactly. I mean, and I want to talk too here about the writers. Michelle Lavretta developed Killjoys. And for those of you who are fan freaks, Michelle also developed Lost Girl. So you know that there's going to be a lot of really interesting storylines in Killjoys if you've watched Lost Girl, and you know that there's a lot of political intrigue, there's a lot of really different characters and a lot of characters who are exploring not only external things that are going on, but internal demons, both literal and figurative in Lost Girl. Here in Killjoys, it's mostly metaphorical.
Mostly.
But one of the things that Lavretta always brings to the table, and Emily Andras, who developed Wynonna Earp, has also been peripherally involved, I believe, in Killjoys. I know she wrote one of the episodes, at least one in season one. There's like, you know, kind of this pansexuality, queer rep thing that goes on in shows that they do. And we see that with Pri, who is gender fluid. But we also see a little hint of it between Dutch and one of the villains of the Nine, Delsea Kendry. There's serious fucking hate flirting going on there. And it is actually...
Oh, that was so much fun.
It was delicious and it was delightful to watch these two kind of joust in terms of their dialogue. The dialogue in this show is exquisite. It's snarky. It's fun. And when Dutch and Del are like hate flirting, oh my God, sparks are flying. These two women have a hell of a lot of chemistry. I'm not going to, you know, go any further than that. But suffice it to say that Lavretta does play a lot with that kind of idea. And obviously in this world, which is in the future somewhere, it's not that big a deal for, you know, for the queer. It's really, in her world, at least it's not. And I loved that it was just kind of par for the course. Like, and that's how it was in Lost Girl. It's just like, you know, people, like some people hit it with the same sex, some with other sex, some are pansexual, some are omnisexual, and nobody freaking blinks an eye. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever. Boom, done.
Yeah, it's an organic part of the world, and it's just there. There's no real attention drawn to it, but it exists. And when you have a society as complex as the ones that Lavretta has built, yeah, of course you're going to have queer people in there because, hello, they exist.
No. Really?
I know, right?
That's crazy talk now.
I'm sorry. Am I outing us again?
Oh my God. It's hilarious. All right. I want to talk a little bit about Dutch. Again, played by Hannah John Kamen. One of the other thing that I noticed in, and this is kind of par for the course in a Lavretta show, and also, you know, when Emily Andras is involved, is that the women, the male and the female characters in the show, there's no dudes lording it over the women.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's an interaction as people, and that is so refreshing to me because, you know, here's Dutch. She's the captain of this ship. She's a level 5 killjoy. And Davin, both Davin and Johnny, are like, yeah, okay, she's the captain. That, you know, that's how it's going to go. Boom, done. No problem.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's do it.
There's no posturing. There's no alpha male chest thumping. There's no suggestion that either of them might be better off as the captain and the leader of their trio. They just realize that she's the one for the job and they follow her lead. Not to say they don't occasionally disagree, but it's not in a, you know, like, authority challenging kind of way.
It's not a gendered way.
Right. It's a, my opinion on this differs from yours. I think we should do something else. They fight about it, come to an agreement, and move on. And it never has anything to do with anybody's gender. You know, none of them are either like, well, you're just saying that because it's your time of the month, or you're just saying that because you had a shitty, you know, childhood and you hate your dad, or, you know, I mean, it doesn't come up.
No, it doesn't, and it's so great. It's like the times when you watch the three of them jousting, like, Dutch, are you sure that's what you want to do? It's like, ultimately, she is in charge. It's her ship. That's how it is, and everybody is fine with her being the captain, but like you say, they'll bring something up if they're not in total agreement, which I think is how it operates in virtually any circumstance. You know, hey, captain, I'm not sure about this, and this is why. But there's never, like, this gendered bullshit that comes into it. Like, Davin never says, oh, well, you know, a woman probably wouldn't be able to make those decisions. I mean, it's just, like, so refreshing. Yeah. I love that about this show, that everybody is an individual with a certain job to do, and everybody else is like, okay, so Dutch is really good at XYZ, so she's in charge of that. I'm really good at this, and so I'm in charge of this, and she's in charge of the ship. Okay, we got it. Let's do this. I love that. It's really refreshing.
Yep.
So tell me some of your other fave characters. You've already mentioned Potter, and I like Alvis, actually, the Scarback. He's a really intriguing character for me because you don't know his motivations.
Yeah, and he has layers on layers. You know, I thought I had a handle on him, and then there was something that happens early in season 2 where I was like, ooh.
Right?
That's not what I was expecting at all.
Exactly. And that's a testament to this, to the writer team, that it's, they just lead you down one path and you're like, okay, la, 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 what the hell? And then, and it, the way that, that it's done and unveiled, it's like, that makes total sense. Once it's done, you're like, oh my God, I never saw that coming.
So we should talk about Klein.
We should. Okay, go.
All right, so Klein is the closest thing that Dutch has to a father figure. He is basically the one who raised her and trained her to be super good at all sorts of, like, martial arts and other kind of shiz. And what's really interesting about him is that, you know, when we first start finding out about Klein, it's very much through the eyes of Dutch as a child. And so you get this, like, one feeling about him. And, you know, you're seeing sort of like what happened with her training when she was younger. And then we start to get more of him interacting with Dutch as an adult. And it, to me, it was really interesting to see that that sort of that dichotomy, watching her nemesis through a child's eyes and then as an adult, and trying to kind of pull apart, you know, okay, so what is really going on here? And it's like sort of the ultimate unreliable narrator kind of scenario, which is really difficult to do in a visual medium like television. But I think they do a pretty good job at it. And the more we learn about Klein, the more sort of opaque he gets. Where I am in season two right now, I have no clue what he is up to. All I know is that he is a very bad man. But like everybody else in this show, is he bad the way we think he is? Or how much of it is just lack of context?
Exactly. And how much of it is perspective from Dutch, right? So we don't know, you know, and that was really fascinating to me. Throughout season one, I was like, fuck you, Klein. You really fucked over Dutch. Oh my God. And then season two, you're like, wait a second. Maybe there's something else going on here behind his motivations for what he was doing.
I mean, and there's no denying that he does do awful things. There are things he does which are objectively terrible things, especially to put a child through that. But when you start to like scratch beneath the surface and expose some of his possible motivations, it's sort of like, okay, wait a minute. What else is going on here?
Exactly.
Everything else in the show, what else is going on here? I mean, the whole show is smoke and mirrors, right? They show us one thing, but there are 15 other things going on behind the scenes, and we're just seeing the tip of the sort of plot iceberg, and there's so much going on underneath it, and they're just like peeling away a chunk at a time and a chunk at a time, and you think you have it, and then they do like some big reveal, and you're like, what? Oh my God. I can't believe this was going on the whole time.
And that's what makes it so brilliant and so well written. And it's just, it's a powerhouse show. And it's so subtle in its reveals sometimes. Like there'll be like a big pow. And then other times it's like this really subtle unwinding. And then you're like, oh my God, I never saw that coming. It's absolutely so much fun to watch because you don't know for sure if you've got something nailed down just right.
Yeah. I mean, watching the show is like, you know, watching someone nail Jell-O to the wall.
All right. Oh my God.
But in the best possible way.
And I'm sure Michelle Lovretta would so appreciate that. Because I follow her on Twitter and she's a hoot. She's a total hoot. Anyway, geez, like we just like got all killjoyed out. It's been 30 minutes, Liz. Look at us. What?
I know, and we could keep going. I mean, we haven't talked totally about any plot specifics or anything. This is all just high-level stuff, but, I mean, seriously, if you are not watching Killjoys, you have got to watch this. It's really easy to, like, blow it off as it's just a sci-fi, it's just a space opera, and there's nothing else going on there. But that is so surface, and there is so much going on just beneath it. And it will, the longer you watch it, like the more your mind will be completely blown.
I want to say to you, and I were talking about this earlier, that especially space opera, especially, provides a really excellent venue for character studies and relationship studies. and it's like basically Friends. If you just think of it as like Westerns in space and political intrigue in space, that's what you're, it's Game of Thrones in space. Okay. You're getting a lot of intrigue and you're getting a lot of really interesting in-depth character studies. And, you know, some people will say, oh, I don't read science fiction. Well, you know, you're missing out on some really interesting ways of making you think of morally ambiguous universes, which is what we live in every freaking day. So I love that, how it can reflect the things that are going on internally, and you can kind of like deconstruct shit by using a different setting with characters that are just like might be bigger than life, but they're also remarkably human underneath it all.
Yeah, absolutely. In a setting like that, I mean, there are so many ways to put your character under so many different pressures and see, you know, how are they going to react? Which, I mean, conflict is the basis of the fun parts of writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
You've got so many opportunities, especially in a setting like this one, where the conflicts are you know, multi-layered, multi-hued, as long as it's gray.
Right, exactly. It's like, and I love it. So I'm going to wrap us up now, Lise, because, you know, we got to, like, you know, keep us to the limit. Darn it. So y'all,
I gotta go to bed soon.
Oh my God, Jesus. Okay, so if you want to see this, if you're in the U.S., you can catch seasons 1 through 3, apparently, on sci-fi.com. If you're on Netflix in the U.S., it is available on DVD. Sorry, Friends. But you can stream it off Amazon. If you're in Canada, you can catch it on Space. And I do think that they have all of the previous seasons available, too. There'll be ads in there as well, but whatever. And if you're in the UK, I believe they're streaming it on Netflix. And if you're in Australia, you can check it there too. I think Netflix is a thing. All right, Friends, thanks so much for hanging with us. It was a blast. The show is Killjoys. It's available on Sci-Fi. And the new season will be dropping hopefully this fall on Sci-Fi. And you can, again, you can catch those episodes at sci-fi.com. Thanks again, everybody. This has been Les Geek Out. I am Andy Marquette with my colleague, Lise McTague. Say something, Lise.
Oh, crap. That's me. Bye, everyone. Boom.
All right. Thanks, y'all. Have a good week. Peace. Whew. Lordy.
I was all out of sorts. I had to go let my cat out before he started banging on the door.
Is he okay? Is your kitty okay? I mean, for real?
Oh, yeah, he's fine. He likes hanging out with me in here.
Mm.
And half the time, that means me trying to, like, write around him.
Aw, so cute.
Yeah, but my desk is not nearly big enough for both a laptop and a mouse pad and a cat.
And a giant kitty. Okay, that's cool. All right.
So, yeah.
All right, dude. Well, guess what I have to do? I have to go catch my Fear of the Walking Dead in Live Tweet. Because a fangirl's work is never done.
You gotta go watch your stories.
That's right, damn it. I gotta tell you something. Season 4 of Fear of the Walking Dead is off the hook already. It's just like, it is blown. It's like my wig is flying off. And there's only been 2 episodes. And my wig is like on the ceiling. It's amazing.
Well, for the sake of your wig, I hope that you don't miss anything.
All right. I'm gonna...